Civilization, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
It's Friday the 19th of September, and I'm sitting in a local pub with Peter Paul. We're just stepping on a pint, and we've just been discussing the referendum in Scotland. It's been an extremely significant time for the UK, and I just think it goes without saying that we've had a very interesting week in politics in Britain, probably the most interesting in years, certainly going way back beyond anything I can remember anyway, at least. And the result, well, we're going to discuss the result. We're going to decide if we feel it was the right decision for Scotland and how it impacts the UK. From my perspective, I'm relieved, because I was pretty nervous. It's interesting, really. I didn't really know where my emotion was coming from, because I'm not particularly patriotic. But I really felt a fear that Scotland were going to vote yes, and I really didn't understand why. And I kind of really felt that it was to do with a family unit being split. And I felt that if Scotland decided they wanted independence from England, essentially, it would have almost been like a rupture in something that I'm used to. It's something that we're all used to. It's a 300-year union, and it all seems to be working. It doesn't seem like there needs to be change. But from a Scottish perspective, I can appreciate that may not be the case. It may be very different. So, Peter, what's your take on what's been going on over the last few days?
Yeah, I think I can see there would be some idealism in Scotland over this. So I've got some sympathy with that. Although I was probably thinking it was a silly idea, I did slightly get one over. I wonder how we'd see it if we lived in Scotland, whether we might see it differently. Yeah, like you said, they probably made the right decision, but I don't think we should say it was an easy decision. I've got some sympathy with them wanting to turn against having London running everything, and although we have subsidised them quite a lot, they've also been their guinea pig for a lot of things, the poll tax and stuff like that. And of course they had the Trident nuclear weapons up there, which I don't particularly like having. Although, ironically, they probably built submarines too, so they like the work there to have that. So it's a bit of a contradiction. But at one level, I could see if they had split away from Britain and made something independent. If it had been against some of the almost New World Order-y type concepts, a bit more than they were saying, like being against the banking system maybe, and maybe bringing in a citizen's income for everybody, that'd be a great idea. Things that are more socialist or green in their ideas, perhaps, and anti-globalist a bit while still being commercially viable, that might have been good. I'm not entirely sure that was the agenda they had, though. I think they really wanted to split away from Britain and maybe more England, really, and be a separate country and kind of stick their tongue out a little bit and say we're Scottish and we're over here and you're over there, like the Jocks and the Geordies, and I think it was in the Dandy or the Beano years ago, the two groups, the two gangs that used to fight each other over the border. But unless they had a particular different view to offer, except we're just independent, it could just be another slice of the same cake, you know. And if it wasn't going to take things any, make a different sort of world, you're just going to be paying your taxes to the same, the same system, but just based in a different place. But if you're paying the same sort of VAT to a Scottish government instead of an English government, and having all the same problems in miniature, that wouldn't really improve things. So I don't know whether it's, in a sense, better for them in terms of how they see it. They may feel they've rejected something that would have been really idealistic or brilliant, but it may turn out they've rejected something that wouldn't have been much good.
Yeah, from my perspective, the whole thing just had a bit of an anti-English sentiment, and I found that quite offensive, really. And I think a lot of people in the UK, in England chiefly, just found that a bit surprising, and a bit, it was almost like a sort of sense of betrayal, like they were breaking away from a family unit. And I appreciate that true patriotic Scots want independence. They like the idea of true independence, and there's a lot of historical narrative there. But this union now has been going on for 300 years, and from my perspective, I think it's just let bygones be bygones. I mean, we aren't the England of 300 years ago or 500 years ago. We're not the empire anymore. And Westminster have done a lot of good for Scotland, and this is where things like the quite controversial concept of the Westlovian question comes in. And this is a weird concept, and I think for people that aren't in the UK, they probably wouldn't know what it is. But it's basically where in Westminster, in Parliament, in London, essentially Scottish MPs can vote on matters that affect English and Scottish constituents, whereas English MPs cannot do the same for Scottish constituents. They can only vote for matters that affect English. And that's just quite a weird anomaly, which just needs to be sorted out. And one of the problems I think this whole thing's revealed for the UK is that we simply don't have a written constitution. And that was something that I remember learning a lot about when I studied law at uni, was the idea that Britain doesn't have a constitution, which is bizarre, but it's unwritten. So there's this sort of academic debate about this where they say that, well, actually, it's not that we don't have a constitution, it's just that it's unwritten, which is this really bizarre abstract concept. But without getting too deeply into that, because that's a long discussion, it just, this whole thing just highlights the fact that there's a real need now for a lot of reform in the UK. And I think a lot of people will be a lot happier if things are done, not just in Scotland, but in England and Wales and Northern Ireland, that just tidy up this really ancient system. Because there's just a lot of really weird stuff going on that doesn't need to make much sense. And certainly, I think from outside perspective, it just seems like a complete mess, a lot of it. Would you say that's sort of what this has revealed, some of it at least?
Yeah, I mean, it's evolved. Yeah, it wasn't really designed. I mean, we've got the Magna Carta, of course, but apparently that really only applied to Lords when it was signed. It wasn't really a constitution as such, and it was disputed a bit. But yeah, it's a basis of something, and you could say if we don't have to write it down, it's a great honourable thing that everyone can agree to, and we're gentlemen and all this sort of thing. But you know, probably it's better to have something written down in the end. Obviously the US have got a constitution, but they do amend it, of course, and we've had a lot of talk on InfoWars recently about, you know, the gun rights and all this sort of thing, about the right to bear arms and all this sort of thing, which is in the constitution. So what the constitution would have, would have to be argued too. But in Scotland, of course, now, that they were trying to make was this kind of multicultural Celtic, almost a Celtic tiger that was socialist and also multicultural. And you know, I think I've sort of Commonwealth Games, the ceremony, it was great, but in the day dancing around in the Tunnock's tea cake outfit, it doesn't entirely qualify you for running a country necessarily, you know. It's all good fun, but is it really solid enough beyond that saying they've got a good grasp of show business and art, culture and stuff? I'm sure they have. I think often more so than down here. I think there's a lot of joie de vivre in Scotland. Some of them think they're a bit dour, but actually they've got the Edinburgh Festival and things like that. They've got a great character up there. But as I understand, before the Union, it was a place of warlords. In fact, it was a very lawless place, and the Union, maybe controversially, did help to settle the peace up there. But yeah, now I think, I personally don't have a problem with it being independent if they could generally do something that was different. But they would probably have to have a constitution of their own if they did that. Just splitting off doesn't mean it's idealism. They could split off and become a little tyranny. That's the problem.
Exactly, and I appreciate that there may be many people in Scotland that like the idea of independence, but I think from my perspective, that's going in the wrong direction. Like, we're living in a world now where borders are becoming less and less relevant, so why have this ancient concept of a border and start talking about independence? It's like, well, really what we should be trying to aspire to is a system where there are no cultural boundaries, like there's no them and us. Like, it's sort of like, it felt to me like a divide and rule situation, where the UK would have been a weaker country in terms of the grand international scene, because we would be divided, and we would have a tiny little island, but we'd be divided, and that divide could have grown and grown and grown. It could have started off as just a simple fact, simple on paper fact, you know, difference in terms of, oh, they're not ruled by London. For all we know, 10 years down the line, that could have got quite militant. It could have been like some Eastern European situation where they erect a wall, or we just don't know. I mean, it's probably unlikely, but the impression I get is a lot of, I mean, it's not everyone, it's certainly not the majority in Scotland, but there is certainly an element of Scotland who is very anti-English, and I think a lot of it is really basically down to sort of football and stuff. It's not really a lot more than that, certainly. Yeah, in places like
socialism as well.
Yeah,
socialism, heavy left wing.
Yeah, and certainly in places like Glasgow, where poverty is a serious problem, drug scene, I think a lot of the time they blame the English for a lot of what goes on, and it's probably a very deep debate to go into, and a lot of it's probably correct. I mean, historically, England, we know England's done terrible things all over the world, no doubt, but well, England's done a lot of good stuff for Scotland. I can't remember, there was some formula that some laws knocked up in the 20s. I can't remember the name of it now, but it's controversial. Yeah, it's controversial.
It wasn't in the 20s, it's much more recent.
Oh, okay, yeah, much more recent. So,
I
don't
remember the name of it now, so
is it
it's
Bennett? Bennett?
Something like that, yes.
Yeah, so anyway, it's based. Barnett formula, that's the one. So the Barnett formula is quite a weird one.
They get £1,300 more each per year than we do here.
Just towards sort of based on GDP, the percentage of the for the population.
Yeah, like, I'm not quite sure why they do, but.
Well, that's the question, yeah, nobody knows.
Whether they were poor and they needed a bit of bringing up, possibly. I don't know what the reason was. But the guy who invented this is now saying it needs to be changed. So
absolutely, of course it does. I mean, it's just, and I think to give him some merit, and Cameron was all over the place this week. I think they were getting pretty desperate about what was happening. I think they were quite scared that. I think Scotland were going to vote yes at one point.
Just bring a B off the table.
Yeah, it's just a B on the table. So anyway, so I got the impression that Cameron was getting quite scared. But he did promise all these things, but he's now come out and said that he's going to attempt to rectify the problems that Scotland has with the current setup. But also, he's not just going to rectify that, he's going to look to rectify England's and the problems we've got. So all great words from Cameron. Whether or not he delivers, that's the big question. Who knows?
Well, they have to deliver something. They've got an election coming up. Maybe perhaps you should say something about the Queen's little intercession. What did you make of that?
Wasn't it just a written statement? I'd not read it.
Oh no, but you know, she said that thing outside the church, but you must vote very carefully. Think.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But apparently it was a bit of a setup, because apparently the photographer there who took the photo never gets asked to take pictures there normally, and it was set up for the member of the public to ask that question so she could say that, and it was overheard and then reported. So that was a little bit of manipulation. A little bit of PR, let's say, maybe more than a conspiracy, but a little bit of PR work going on there to sort of allow that to happen, yeah. And I think yeah, the politicians, they did get a little bit in a panic. I mean, if there are, you know, pulling the strings behind the scenes somewhere, I'm sure there are, any forces, I think they must have said, look, we set this thing up to maybe, one of the ideas about the referendum was it was meant to clear the air, this was a silly idea. And they thought it would get 60-40 against. And then it looked like it might even pass or be a draw, virtually. So then they got a bit in a panic later on, and they started to say, you know, all this, that and the other, we'll give you some powers and this, that and the other.
It seemed like something out of Rocky, the first Rocky film, where everyone suspected they knew what the result was going to be. It was all a bit of a sort of formality. But then, actually, it was looking a bit rocky, like a bit dodgy at one point. Rocky was sort of winning, getting some punches in, and everyone started to get involved. So Cameron, Gordon Brown came out of the woodwork, and lots of celebrities on Twitter started getting involved. And I got the impression that a lot of them were kind of called on to sort of start trying to attempt to impact social media and try and spread the vote in one direction. Seemed to be a little bit of that going on. But certainly one of the things I got out of this was... And at first, I guess I wasn't even decided about where I felt Scotland should be headed. And if it was all based on the sort of thing Ian R. Crane was talking about, like if Scotland was like literally doing an Iceland and saying sod you to the big banks and wanting to break away and actually set up something like use Bitcoin as a global currency or some crazy thing like that. Their currency, not global one. that, yeah, sure, I would have been quite interested. But it was nothing overly radical. It was, but the thing that I got from the Yes campaign was it felt like a cult. And it really did feel like a sinister, very organised, very aggressive cult. And they seemed to be doing a lot of sort of really sort of pushy canvassing. And I guess that they felt the need to because they were very passionate about it. But it seemed to me to blur the line between whether or not they were operating the way they should be and if it was actually getting a little bit cultish at times.
Well, you know, I've been involved with a couple of referenda in Brighton before when we fought the elected mayor idea. And these sort of tactics happened then as well, so it doesn't surprise me. And to a lesser degree, and not an unpleasant degree, when we had the Falmouth Stadium controversy in Brighton, but whether it be built on a greenfield site, there were things done then which, you know, you sometimes think, well, they're manipulating it a bit by asking a question a certain way, and you've got to answer yes, and it makes it look like you support that when you don't. And that's all water under the bridge now, the things you have done and dusted. But it doesn't surprise me there'd be a lot of passion there. But yeah, there was some aerosoling on some polling stations saying, you know, vote yes or else and things like that. That's rather unpleasant.
Yeah, and I think they were doing a lot of manipulation to try and convince young voters that it was the right thing to do, like 16, 17-year-olds, who, of course, are able to vote in this referendum.
Yes, they can't vote in the election, though, so...
Right, interesting. But I read somewhere that there was a lot of that going on, that they were manipulating teenagers to try and convince them that yes was the right way to go.
I think, psychologically, if you have any campaign where yes, the word yes typeset in capital letters, it looks positive.
And a good fancy slogan to go with it.
Yes, you've got a funny flag. Well, not funny flag, sorry, I don't mean that. But, you know, you've got an interesting flag with a white cross and a blue background. So you could do that with face paint. It's a bit like the global warming thing. On Sunday, there's a global warming march in London on the 21st of September 2014. Again, it's the usual thing. I used to be involved with that whole crowd. And, yeah, paint your face, have a balloon, have a big funny banner. It's all fun. There's a lot of paraphernalia goes with these things. When you've got a cause to push, it can be simplified. It seems a lot of fun because you can make it party time. But it's not such a party time thing to say no. When we were on the anti-elected mayor campaign many years ago, back in 2001, again, we were the moaning minis, you know, saying, oh, we don't want this, it's no, or you're being negative. Just because you say no, you're being negative. Well, hold on, it's a referendum, the question has to be yes or no. You could say A or B, but if they put yes or no, one is positive, one is negative. Well, let's say they put the Scottish referendum in a different way. Do you want this to be an independent Scotland, or do you want to continue under the UK? A or B? I'm an A voter, I'm a B voter. Well, it doesn't have the same ring about it. If you put yes, even saying yes, you smile because the E makes you smile. Psychologically, it has that almost neuro-linguistic programming side to it. You know,
I can't remember who said it, but it was an American politician who said something along the lines of change. That's what pushes people to vote, and it's like the promise of change.
Yeah.
And it was something that Barack Obama was really hot on during his 2008 campaign in America. It's all about change, the politics of change.
But interesting, now when I set up to 5 o'clock in the morning, which is later than you would to watch Man Lands on the Moon, to hear the results on radio, it's very, very interesting, really dramatic. I mean, there's a long pause because it's a very spread out area, Scotland. And bear in mind that, you know, because there's a big turnout, normally elections you get a tiny turnout in Britain, maybe 50% or less. So because there was 85%, there were lots of ballot papers to count. So that's why it was so late, the results. And even then, though, I thought it might be that 100% turnout. It shows a 15% still can't give a monkeys either way, which I don't think anyone's really alluded to. I mean, in Glasgow, there was only 75% turnout. I mean, it's a quarter of the population didn't even give a monkeys about the future, to the point where they were registered to vote, but they couldn't be bothered to turn out. I mean, you kind of think there's a lot of despair or nihilism or absolute disbelief there at some level, you know, which should be... noted, I think.
Yeah, it's a good point, though.
Maybe they just think the process is all a waste of time anyway and it doesn't affect them, you know. But it was interesting, dramatic to follow it through the night. And yeah, there's a bit of alleged voter fraud or impersonation at one point. I think 10 votes were faked somewhere. Nothing very much. And there's a fire alarm, I think, at Dundee at one point, and he could say, well, is everyone going to get out of the building and they start putting in fake votes and things like this? But I don't think it was anything like that. But interesting little events through the night. If you're following it live, you know, fog coming down, stopping planes, taking off and all this sort of thing, all the good stuff.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I couldn't stay up that late, but I saw some of it. And it was, I was actually quite terrified, actually, I'll be honest, of the fact they might vote yes. And a lot of people I was talking to at work felt the same way. And I really did sense relief this morning on the train. I was on the train heading to work, and I really sensed relief. And I may have imagined it. I don't think I did, though. I think that people were sort of looking in the newspapers, checking on their phone, checking the news, etc. I think they just said, and I think there was a Scottish guy joking with somebody on the train, and somebody said something along the lines of, "Oh, we'll look after you, mate. You're better off with us." And there was a bit of a jolly kind of bit of banter. Yeah. And I don't know. I just felt like there was a sense that we are family, and we're extremely closely bonded nations, series of nations on its islands, and steeps in history and all sorts of things, common culture. And it just felt like if they'd have decided they wanted independence, it I think it would have really hurt England. I think we would have actually felt it significantly. And that's certainly the impression I got. And I may be over dramatising it, but I don't know. It may just be that some odd sense of patriotism creeps in, which I don't usually get. I'm not a particularly patriotic person, but it just felt like we live in a world now of huge superpowers, China, Russia, and blocks, power blocks, and Britain is an extremely influential country, and it's a tiny country geographically. And it just felt like if something like this had actually happened, a split, it really could have messed things up. And I don't know, it would have worked out fine, possibly. But there was somebody on the news last night on the BBC News who was interviewed, who summed it up pretty succinctly. I can't remember their name, it was just some pundit, some analyst. But they just said that the whole thing was so significant for Britain, and it was probably one of the most significant moments of certainly our country's had since maybe even World War II. And perhaps people didn't. And what I was scared about was the fact that people in Scotland didn't really realise that. They were going into it, like you say, just thinking, oh yes, we want change, sounds good to me. But then they weren't actually thinking about the deeper sort of element, the deeper context and the ramifications of what a yes vote might mean.
Well, would they have been in the European Union? Would they have had the Euro?
Exactly, and no one really knew, did they? I think there was some talk about that, and Alex Salmond said we could join the EU, but we want to keep the pounds. And then Alistair Darling said, no, you can't keep the pounds. And then somebody came out and said, oh, you can keep the pound. It was just, no one really knew. Everyone was just swinging, just they had no idea.
Well, it's a mystery, because there is a Scottish pound note that is slightly different from ours, but it's legal tender down here. But it is a pound, but they just have their own design on it, but you can use it down here. You sometimes get them in your change, but you normally try and get rid of them because you think, oh, I'm not sure about this money down here, you know. But you can spend them. But I believe there's a bit of a dodgy deal, and this is Shortlist magazine, which I get every week. It's this issue has just come out in on Thursday, the day of the referendum. It's got an article here about this very subject, or related to it. What does the referendum mean for Trident? And it's an article by ITV News' Martin Gessler, I think that is. And it's talking about Trident and the fact the SNP wanted to get rid of Trident. Well, whatever you think of that issue or not, they believe they don't want it there, fair enough. That's a thing they can campaign on. But you think if they wanted to get rid of nuclear weapons, that'd be a pretty fundamental thing to believe in and not compromise. But then it appears at the end, it's when I read the article, it's Gessler even suggests that Salmond could use Trident as a bargaining chip in his efforts for an independent Scotland to keep the pound. Let's not discount the possibility that when both sides sit down to these negotiations, Westminster says, look, you, Salmond, want the pound. We want you to keep Trident. Let's do a deal. 30 years of Trident, you can keep the pound. well, where's the integrity there, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
If that had happened, okay, it's Westminster maybe saying it's salmon, but would he have had to have done that to get the pounds? And would he have sold out on that?
Interesting, yeah, very interesting.
And also, they build their submarines, I think they build them up in Scotland, anyway. I may be wrong about that.
Well, militarily, we're very interlinked, and that was the other big thing about this. It would have impacted us militarily, and Britain's still a major player in the world when it comes to our military sort of power, and we're nothing compared to the United States, but that's really because of the fact that all things are relative to GDP and global prominence and stuff, and we have a military size that's equivalent to our power projection and our, you know, global politics and all that sort of thing. It's all quite interesting, but essentially if Scotland had pulled away and gained independence, there would have been a huge challenge for us in terms of our defence. And I mean, we still have Russian Topolev 95 Soviet era bombers flying into our airspace, and that this goes on all the time, and the RAF have to scramble Typhoon jets to escort them out of our airspace. It's all this, and particularly with what's going on with Russia and Ukraine at the moment, we really need a strong military. And I mean, say what you will about this maybe being some global agenda to try and push a new Cold War, and it's all just a game. Might well be the case, but the point is that we would be significantly weakened, and I think I would personally feel I'd feel less secure, frankly, because I would feel like we would struggle to actually maintain defence, because a lot of what goes on, like the Russians usually fly over Scotland, so what would happen? Would the RAF been responsible for Scottish airspace again?
Well, I guess maybe we're, I mean, they might feel less secure living up there, maybe.
I guess living up there, but I think what I'm trying to say is that, like, we have a lot of, I mean, there's regiments that, you know, the Scots are formidable fighters, and there's steeps in history, the armies interlinked, and I don't know, there would have had to have been such a radical shake-up of things, and no one really knew what Scotland's plan was for their military, like a Scottish army, no one really knew what they were planning, and it just feels to me like it was something that could have quite easily happened if, so say that the yes vote had been successful last night, it feels to me like it could, if that had happened, it may have been an absolute disaster, and it may have been something that they actually ended up regretting 5 years later.
Well, that's true. They said it would be split apart forever. I mean, possibly you could have joined the UK again if we'd have you back, maybe, if Scotland had split up, but I don't think anything can ever be said not to be reversible, but even so, yeah, you wouldn't reverse it easily, and it could well have been, I wish it would be a success if they did it, if they had ideals behind it. That's what my worry was, that they were doing it just out of a lot of rather jingoistic reasons. You know, but if it worked for them, fine, but if it hadn't worked, what was the plan? You know, they were trying to say, but that's Scandinavia and things like that. Well, they've got a lot of money over there, high taxes to pay for everything. They haven't really got that in Scotland. I think the idea of Scotland was to get the population up, because they've only got about 4 million population, which is, well, less than half the population in London, to put it in perspective, and a huge land.
So 75 million people in the UK, so 90% of that, I think, is England.
Yeah, so it's nothing, really. Scotland is virtually empty, so you have to have lots of immigration, so that might be what you'd have to end up doing, possibly, and that might be the socialist agenda. Well, perhaps it is, but maybe within a simpler lifestyle they could have sustained it up there, but they would have to tell everyone you've got to have a much simpler demand on the system, because you're not going to have the money to pay for all this stuff. And I think they wanted all these universities to be free, prescriptions to be free, everything to be free, but there would be no money to pay for all this.
Yeah, exactly. And say let's flip the coin for a minute, and say all of that ended up happening and it actually proved to be a success. Say they voted yes, and 10 years time they had all these great aspirations, and actually they delivered on all of those fronts, so they had everything was almost free and really socialist utopia. What would have stopped a mass immigration of people from England and Wales and Northern Ireland to just head on into Scotland? Because if they're part of the EU, then they have to adhere to this open border policy that the EU has, because otherwise it goes against the some EU directive. I can't remember which one, but it basically goes against EU membership.
Well, there is an interesting point where you know that if you're a student from England and you go to Scotland, you have to pay the tuition fees. And if you're from anywhere else in Europe, you don't have to. And they're actually trying, the Scottish government's trying to fight that and say, well, because I think it's going to be reversed possibly, but they're trying to fight it being reversed, which is wrong. If they've got independence, they were going to try and keep it like that, which I think would be very immoral. I think if they're in the EU, they've got to say everybody has the same rules or you're not in the EU. They can't play it both ways.
Yeah, it feels, it's very strange. It just feels as if, it all goes back to the whole Westlothian question, I guess, but it kind of just feels like Scotland, in a way, is they're kind of, they're almost like first-class citizens for some reason, and I think it all goes back to the Westlothian question. I think it's just, as somebody was saying this morning on Radio 4, that apparently if it wasn't for the Scottish MPs, tuition fees, Tony Blair's great idea for tuition fees in England would never have gone through, because they were basically the Scottish MPs voted for it in England, which is outrageous when you think about it, really. From the perspective of an English person, it's horrific to think that sort of thing goes on, and that's why I think we just need a radical overhaul.
Well, certainly a lot of dissatisfaction. They are now looking at shaking up the whole country, the whole UK. Of course, we haven't mentioned UKIP and a European referendum. I mean, if Scotland had left us yesterday, we wouldn't be to 2016 if they had. If we had a referendum to leave the EU, and if we had said we're leaving it, that would leave Scotland in it and us not in it, and that might have caused all sorts of issues as well. But the way it is, as things have turned out, it looks like they're going to be having a look at the so-called Constitution of Britain and the way it's run. And it remains to be seen what emerges from that. But yes, what Martin's saying is right about, they're going to have to look at these things. Maybe probably won't be an English Parliament, but there may be a way of segregating certain MPs off for certain votes, so that you only have the right MPs voting on the right subjects. So that's probably the way it's going to go.
Yeah, and let's just hope that Cameron actually sticks to his word on this and we see some changes in the UK. But it's been a very interesting few days, and it's definitely been very historical, very significant for this country. And it's been pretty fascinating, but quite scary as well. But I think we're both in agreement that perhaps it was the best outcome. But if circumstances had been different, maybe the idea of an independent Scotland would have actually been a good thing. If ideas that Ian R. Crane, for example, was putting forward, things like saying we're going to break away from global banks, yes, and basically the sort of thing ISIN were trying to achieve, then yeah, it might have been a much more interesting sort of debate, and perhaps I would have been inclined to say that the yes vote was the way to go. But I just think, based on what we know and based on what was said, it seems like relief all round, really, for most people. So I think we'll continue sipping on our pints.
Yeah, obviously we're saying all this from an English perspective. We wish all our Scottish listeners well from both sides, because we can understand both sides of the argument. I suspect if we were living in Scotland, we'd have a slightly different view of some of it, because on the ground you always get a slightly different feel of campaigns when you're actually in an area.
Yeah.
We're obviously saying this from quite a long way away.
We are, and also I think it's probably worth mentioning that we have Irish roots, so we aren't just these English guys just ranting about this sort of thing. It's just I think it's just that it certainly in the south coast of England, there's just a sense that we don't like the idea of division anymore, and we don't like the idea of there being a sort of them and us culture. And I think if Scotland had voted yes, it would have increased that divide, and it just would have fractured our society. And that's what I certainly feared. That's really the main fear I had, was I just felt like it would have caused a real rupture. But certainly from a Scottish perspective, I can totally appreciate that historically there's a lot at play here. and it's I'm not saying that history doesn't matter. It's just that I just think we just have to sort of move on, and trying to live in a society nowadays, we've got new problems to face, new things we've got to deal with. Just feel like we're stronger together, really. But anyway, I don't want to sound like a propaganda piece for the No campaign. So yeah, we'll leave it there.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.